Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This week, the Bookshelf Cinema is screening Jimmy's Hall, Trainwreck, The True Cost, Blade Runner, The Final Cut, Learning to Drive, The End of the Tour, and more. And at the E-Bar, Piccadillo play on October 1st, and on October 2nd, Gregory Pepper and His Problems celebrate the release of their excellent new record, Chorus, 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 with the Stu Gunn Band and So Young opening up the show. The Bookshelf is an independently owned cultural hub located at 41 Quebec Street in Guelph. More information about their hours, listings, blogs, and accessibility, please visit bookshelf.ca.
Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
On this episode, two separate interviews with two separate members of the new supergroup FFS. This features members of Franz Ferdinand and Sparks, two excellent bands. And on this show, you're going to hear an interview with Russell Mail of Sparks, and you'll hear more about who they are and what Sparks is, if you don't know, very soon. You're going to hear from Russell Mail and also the lead singer and a guitarist in Franz Ferdinand, Alex Kapranos. So Alex and Russell. Russell and Alex, actually, is the order you're going to hear them in. And you're going to hear new music by Sparks as well on this show, so stick around for that. I love this record. It was very unexpected. Part of a plan to be a surprise on some level, you'll hear when you get to the Alex part of the show. Just a quick note, since recording these interviews and their introductions, I should point out that the venue for their forthcoming Toronto show has changed from the Sound Academy to the Phoenix. So FFS are playing at the Phoenix on September 30th, if you hear this in time. And if not, doesn't matter. Shouldn't matter. In any event, I just want to clarify that. And I want you to now sit or stand or do whatever you need to do and listen to myself and Russell and Alex from FFS and new music by FFS. Great record, great band. Check it out. This episode is brought to you by Pizza Trocadero, the finest pizzeria in all of Guelph, Ontario. They've got delicious gourmet pizzas, or choose from an array of fresh ingredients and make whatever you like. Calzones, wings, panzerotti, salads, breadsticks, garlic bread. Pizza Trocadero has it all. You can find them at 7 Municipal Street in Guelph or visit them online at trocaderoguelph.ca. That's TrocaderoGuelph.ca. Call them at 519-829-2444 for pickup or delivery. That's Pizza Trocadero, a place of the good trade.
You get the run around from him, run around from her, run around, around, around. You get the put you down from him,
put you down from her. The always, always put you down.
You get the shake you down from him. The shake you down from her. The always, always shake you down.
Get to the point and point to the open door.
Get right to the point and there's the door. Tell everybody to piss off tonight, or they should piss off and leave you alone in your world tonight. Most will listen and take the hint. Know that this ain't a compliment, and they should piss off and leave you alone in your world tonight.
Russell Mail is a very talented musician and singer who originally hails from Culver City, California. Along with his brother Ron, he formed the pioneering electropop and prototypical new wave band Sparks in the early part of the 1970s, and went on to achieve chart success and develop a loyal following. Musicians in particular have been drawn to the instrumental and lyrical daring of Sparks, who frequently set trends just by operating outside of the conventions of rock music and experimenting with sounds and theatricality. The popular Scottish band Franz Ferdinand certainly views Sparks as mentors, and mutual admiration has led the two to a remarkable collaboration called FFS, whose self-titled debut came out this past June via Domino Records and will certainly stand as one of the finest albums of 2015. FFS are on a world tour that brings them to Toronto Sound Academy on September 30th, and here now to discuss it is Russell Mail. Russell, how are you?
Oh, good, thank you. Yeah.
Nice to speak with you.
Speaking to you from Zurich, Switzerland.
Now, what?
As we are on tour. So.
You're on tour. How are things in Zurich?
They're fine. We actually just arrived yesterday. We arrived from Tokyo. We did a big festival there, which was really amazing. And then we flew direct from Tokyo to Zurich. So the jet lag is starting to pile up as we're speaking, but we managed to get through it.
What was the name of the festival in Japan? Was it the Fuji?
Yeah, we did Summer Sonic this year. We played the other one, Fuji Rock, which you were gonna mention, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this year we did the competing festival, which is called Summer Sonic.
So how are you finding this? You're playing to, is your band, is Sparks used to playing festivals, playing to general audiences as opposed to people coming to just see you?
Well, I mean, we're not as used to it as Franz Ferdinand are. We have a really loyal and rabid fan base, but in the past, we haven't done as many of the high-profile festivals as we're doing on this tour. So it's been a really, really great experience and, sometimes different experience for us to be able to play to audiences that maybe in the past some might not even know Sparks, or they've heard of Sparks but have never seen us play. So we're really getting to increase our, the fan base for Sparks by doing what we're doing with FFS. It's really been great.
Yeah. Now, based on your experience and the longevity of your work with Sparks, have you come to find any typification of your audience? Like when I feel like you make music that people who with discerning tastes and pop fans should gravitate towards, but for whatever reason, the band is still sort of considered a cult band, so to speak. When you're playing before a general audience, are you seeing your perceptions of who might be into what you're doing expanding?
Yeah, well, I think so, just by the nature of the situation with FFS, with the two bands having formed this new entity, we're finding that, and we're doing a few, we're doing the FFS album live. We wanted that to be the focus, but we are doing a couple songs from either band's back catalog as well. And so, we're finding that, the people that maybe weren't aware so much of Sparks, they're now being introduced and they're actually, going back and investigating, going, well, how did I not know about this band that has 23 albums out? And so we are really reaching this new audience, and everybody has been, from the people that are maybe coming more from Franz Ferdinand's camp, they're actually really embracing Sparks now, and it's been a really great experience.
So that you're dealing a little bit there with, or delving into rather, reception, at least from an audience perspective. What has surprised you the most about the overall reception, critics and listeners and fans and people at festivals and concerts? But that reception and also the execution of this partnership with FFS. I want to say FFX because it sounds like special effects, kind of.
Right.
I don't know why. But is there something, can you kind of...
The first thing is it's just been so universally embraced, this album and the collaboration. And it's, you know, we did it just for... There was a real passion about just wanting to do something special and do something that was kind of a precedent where two fully formed bands actually unite together, compose a whole album of new material, and then actually take that on the road. And we can't think of many other precedents where this has happened. And so just having done that was the main motivation, was just to do something that we all felt was really special. But then as a byproduct, that the reception to the album has been so strong everywhere in the world where we've gone, and we toured quite a bit already with this, and we're only about halfway through.
Yeah,
and it's been so universally accepted, the album, and then we didn't know how the live perception would be either, and that has just gone, you know, kind of beyond anybody's expectations. It's just been so amazing. We keep going, wow. I guess they liked us. So, you know, both critically and also just the audiences. We played in, like I mentioned, in Tokyo the other night, and it was about 20,000 people, and you know, really going just crazy for the new album and stuff. And so it's, you know, it's just really satisfying knowing that you're doing something that you think yourself is really good in your own terms, and then when you find out that there's a lot of people out there that also agree with you. It's really satisfying.
You mentioned that you're doing things that maybe you're not so used to, but maybe Franz Ferdinand are, that in terms of playing bigger festivals and things like that. The second part of my question sort of relates to that. What about the execution? What about the actual execution of the logistics to make this partnership and union work? What about that has surprised you in terms of how easy or difficult it might have been before?
No, it's all gone. It's all gone really smoothly. We just get along really well with all the guys in Franz Ferdinand for starters, so there's not an issue in that area at all. We like each other, and then you know, the whole process took place actually from, you know, long distance. We live in Los Angeles, and they all share their time between Glasgow and London, and so it was all done 6,000 miles apart, the whole composing process, where we would come up with a lot of the songs just on our own and send it to them, and they had a couple that they had from their side. But, you know, a lot of them, ones like Johnny Delusional, Piss Off, Save Me For Myself, Dictator's Son, Power Couple, those were all written by Ron, and then there was a couple from their side, like Little Guy From The Suburbs was written by Alex. And then there were a couple that were sort of hybrid songs where they had an instrumental only track, and then they would send it to us, and then we came up with the melody and the lyrics for it. So it was kind of a unique process of, you know, how we worked on the whole album. And then once we decided on that all of those songs were liked by both sides, then we rehearsed in London with them for about 2 weeks, and then went in and really recorded the album really fast after that. But it was only after having prepared for probably 11 months before the album, just to come up with enough good material.
I was reading that you in Sparks initiated contact with Franz Ferdinand as far back as maybe 2004. Is it true that you sent them a version of the song Piss Off?
Yeah. We wrote that song just specially for a collaboration with them, and then at that time, just logistically, it wasn't possible for them. They got really busy, and then we also had projects going on at the same time, so we'd written that song then, and it finally saw the light of day 11 years later when we dragged it out of mothballs and re-recorded it. But, you know, it sounds surprisingly, the version that's on the album, surprisingly like the demo that we, Ron and I, had made 11 years ago. So,
In some cases, it would be thought of as somewhat presumptuous for one band to send another band a song. Can you? And be like, hey, we have a song for you. You clearly had initiated contact before that, or were you just like, because I think they were vocal about their their love of you guys? And did you just hear that and say, hey, you know, we've heard things. Here's a thing.
Yeah, no, it was done a little bit more not so hurriedly. It was, you know, we had read that they were fans of Sparks, so we actually arranged to meet up with them when they came to LA on the first tour that they did, and we got together with them. And then when we finished the meeting with them or the social get together with them, we just said, hey, you know, sometime we should try doing something together. And they said, God, yeah, it would be amazing. And so it took 11 years for it to finally happen. But right after that, in that meeting, we had written the song Piss Off. And so it wasn't that we had written something prior to even getting to know them a little bit. After that meeting.
You've had remarkable collaborators over the years, and I think some of them are contemporaries. Is this the first time you reached out to a band that is from a different generation and suggested that maybe tapping into, you were, you know, basically essentially saying, I think we're tapping into a similar energy here. Had you done that before?
Well, we've worked with some other bands in the past, but not to this extent. We'd worked with the French band, Les Rites Mitsukos, and we had done a couple songs on their album, one which was a big hit in France called Singing in the Shower. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. We worked with Faith No More before, but it was Faith No More covering with us collaborating with them, just playing on it and me singing, but doing two Spark songs on one of their albums.
Right.
So we work with some other bands, but this is actually a really exceptional situation where we've written all new songs, and with the intent being a complete album. So it's just really deeper and more extensive, the whole thing. And also both bands sort of thrusting themselves into this whole new entity is something that, you know, it's a lot more extensive than we had done with any band.
Sure,
in the past.
Sure. Sparks has been credited with anticipating musical trends, and I'm curious, how much of that stems from actual soothsaying, and how much is that the end result of you guys just being bored with what you're seeing and hearing in front of you?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically more the latter, that we just, you know, we've had a long career. We have 23 albums, and so you always want to kind of be trying to come up with some new wrinkle to what you're doing that is more, you know, is challenging to both yourself and also hopefully challenging to our audience as well. And so we always just want to try to, within the context of what we do, within Ron's lyrical style and his compositional style and with my singing, which are sort of givens, but to try to find new ways, new context to place those in, and to always be just trying to come up with new angles for what we're doing. And mm-hmm. So we think we've done that in the past, and you know, Sparks fans really appreciate that they can't quite know exactly what we might do the next time. You know, we work with Giorgio Moroder in the late 70s after we'd been strictly more of a rock band format. We abandoned all that and went totally electronic. We were, you know, the first band to work with Giorgio Moroder, coming mm-hmm. from a band context as opposed to a solo singer. And that was at the time was seen as a really bold kind of move. And, you know, and we've done more recently, the last album we had done prior to the FFS album was a musical. So we're always just trying to put what we're doing in different sort of contexts, and I think the FFS album is, you know, another example of that, where we just wanted to try to do something that would kind of shake up things.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you make of there's been a rather, I'd say it's fair to say there's been a bit of a renaissance in interest for Giorgio Moroder in the last few years. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think it's really curious, because he was sort of even out of music for the longest time. We're still really good friends with Giorgio, and we keep in touch with him, you know, often. And, you know, he was as surprised as anybody that he got the call from Daft Punk to take part on that album. And there was it's just one of those things that you can't predict, you know, just as a result of that contact by them, that he kind of became really fashionable again as of late. And it was just surprising to him, you know.
Yeah, can you relate to that on some level with this project, with FFS?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's it is something where, you know, you're doing the same, not the same thing that you always do, but you're put into a different situation. But musically, it's kind of, you know, what you've been doing in a general way all along, and just when it's put in a different sort of context, it's just really interesting to see, you know, that there are other people out there in the world that maybe haven't yet heard what you do, you know, and it's really shocking to us after 23 albums that exists. But it's really also really satisfying to know that what we're doing and what we're writing now can reach, you know, new younger fans that weren't aware of the band, and it's only because of the context that it's put in that we're being, you know, we can have those new sort of outlets to reach more people. So it's, you know, it's a really positive situation.
No, it's positive, yes, for sure. I just went, I mean, in the case of Giorgio, you had mentioned that he was kind of done and got the call, whereas you have always been a going concern, really.
Yeah, well, that's the difference. And he was, you know, he was very content to be done because he's, you know, had a really, you know, been really successful, and he, you know, was dabbling in, you know, art and painting and various things just to bide his time. And then lo and behold, he gets a call from two French guys, and he's back now being a perceived as being a really hot older DJ.
Absolutely. Now, how would you, we were speaking earlier about how you and your brother might be making music in some ways as a reaction to other people's music, and trying to distinguish yourselves. How would you describe the popular music of the day when you and Ron first started contemplating being in a band in California?
No, we always just, we were real Anglophiles and really liked a lot of what we heard coming from the UK as opposed to what we heard in our hometown of LA. And so, you know, we were fortunate enough to get an offer to go and move to England and do the Kimono My House album there that was really, really well received, and it really put Sparks on the map. And so, you know, at that time, I think, you know, an album like that was given a chance on the radio and all this, you know, the song This Town Ain't Big Enough for both of us is a really, for it to be a hit single is a really unconventional song in so many ways. And so it would seem really difficult for a song like that to now make it onto, you know, top 40 kind of radio and stuff. So I think, you know, things have really changed, and maybe in not such a good way, things have become a lot more conservative as far as what radio plays and that sort of thing.
It seems as consumers we know a lot more about the business aspect of music than we used to. Like, we kind of know numbers and figures and you know, metrics. Do you think that impacts the way we relate to music?
No, I think it's really unhealthy, because all that stuff is really unimportant. It's really not what it's all about, and that's the sad thing, is that there's so much of the you know, like you said, everybody's aware of, you know, even in, when it, you know, extends to movies and all, you're like, you know, what, you know, the box office for certain movies, and it's not about any of that. That's a whole other thing that, you know, it's for business people to deal with. And, you know, the whole thing about being creative is supposed to be about your art and what you do. And when it becomes, when that side of it becomes as equally, you know, interesting or as important as the creative side of it, it's really kind of, everything sort of lost sight of where, you know, the focus should be.
It hasn't always been this way, right? I mean, this is an amp. This is, I think, back in the day, probably when you guys would have started, certainly there were charts, certainly there were measurements of success, and that's what you would aim for on some level. But I don't know, like, this is clearly an amplified version of the world we're living in now, where everything is view counts and, you know, listens and whatever. That's different.
I think so. And I mean, I think it's really different, yeah.
Does that impact Sparks' interest in continuing on in any way? Like, oh, only...
No, I mean, we just have blinders on and work in our own little world, and all that stuff, if people choose in other bands, even or any other media, choose to make that a priority or have any kind of importance to them, then it's why things in a general kind of way are are even musically more conservative now is because everybody is, they are concerned with, you know, how many views you have, how many, you know, just the more that side of it that's got nothing to do with creating something. And it, you just have to, if you're worried about that side of it, then you're never going to come up with anything fresh and exciting musically.
Yeah.
Because it's just not about that at all.
You and your brother both have, as far as I know anyway, film and theater studies backgrounds. And much is made of the kind of theatrical aspect of Sparks Live and even in terms of the arrangements. Can you talk about how those backgrounds impact what you and your brother do?
Yeah, I mean, we're both just, we really like cinema a lot, and especially when we're both going to UCLA and really, you know, I was in the film school there and he's in design and you know, we just like film a lot and sort of making music and is our way of being able to make little mini films in a certain way, but with a much smaller budget than you need to make a full-fledged film. And so, you know, we've always just really liked cinema, you know, a lot. And we're even working on two film musical projects at the moment. One, I mentioned that it's our last album, which was called The Sex of Ingmar Bergman. And it's a musical that we're going to be doing as a feature film. And there's a second one that we've also written that is brand new, that's going to be directed by a French director. So we're really, really like, especially to be able to combine music with cinema. I think that it's something that, you know, we dabbled in from time to time, but for the next couple projects that we have two in mind that we're going to be, it's going to be getting more into that area, not at the exclusion of other stuff, but
yeah.
Have those projects going on.
That sounds interesting. There's been a long rumored Tim Burton collaboration.
Yeah, it's a long saga. That was actually the first musical that we wrote for him. It's called My the Psychic Girl, based on a Japanese manga. And it's still in Tim's development camp. So, you know, at some point in the future, he's threatened that he's going to make it actually happen. It's been going on now since the early 90s.
Yeah. It's not dead. It's in development. It's in theory. In theory, it could happen.
In theory, it could happen, yeah. We've met with him again more recently, and it's still in his catalog of, projects in development. So
okay.
We'll see what happens.
Beyond the cinematic quality, the theatrical quality, I think Sparks is credited with really infusing music, or rather humor in your music. Sometimes humor and music gets short shrift. Sometimes people don't take it seriously, or they assume the band is in itself a joke. Can you talk about how...
Yeah, I mean, what you just said is, kind of hitting it right on the head, that when there is humor at any time in what you're doing musically or lyrically, then it's sometimes perceived that it can't have substance or depth to it because it's too, lightweight, and we never see things in those terms. We think that there's often different levels within the lyrics that where things can have a humorous element to it, but there's also another side to it that's also, more deep or poignant as well. And so we think that there is a place for humor within music, and it doesn't mean that the music is any less substantial.
Do you have any view or perspective, rather, on why some people downplay the value of humor in music?
Well, I think that there's always this thing that if you're writing what people might assume is like earnestness, there's a certain earnestness to, if you have love themes all the time that are more conventional, that's being earnest. But if you maybe even talk about a love theme, but it's done in an unconventional way and maybe with some humor, that it's less substantial. And from our standpoint, it's just that a lot of that stuff is just hackneyed and cliched ways of dealing with, say, a love song. That there's a way to, if you want to write about love issues, you can do it also in ways that are fresh and unique, and sometimes that may include having some humorous elements, but it doesn't make it any less, you know, substantial. And so I think a lot of times things that are more hackneyed or trite sometimes are taken in the wrong way, that they're taken as being, having a more seriousness to them, and it's, I don't know, I never can understand that.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, does it? I mean, there's more substance in Mr. Delusional or Call Girl or any of the songs on the FFS record that sort of delve into these ideas of romance, but from unique angles. They seem more substantial than half the stuff I hear.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. I appreciate it, because that's exactly how we see it. And Johnny Delusional is a really good example.
Right, Johnny Delusional, sorry.
Yeah, it's a really, you know, it's a poignant song, but someone might think, oh, that's kind of humorous, a guy named Johnny Delusional, but in fact, it's this, you know, kind of a sad story about a guy never being able to kind of make the match that he hopes that he can, you know, that he's trying for. And so it's actually kind of a sad song.
Yeah. Yeah. I was watching the Glastonbury Festival performance by FFS on YouTube, and I was struck by how energetic you were on stage, and also by how relatively sedate your brother was. Your brother is known for having this unique presence on stage. It's usually very intense. And in any case, I was curious about how your performance mode shifted from Sparks to FFX, because you're balancing your work and the way your approach with that of a younger band. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think that Ron and myself are pretty much doing what we always have done stage-wise within the context of Sparks as well. And I think it's just we have some other people to interact with on stage that we didn't before, who are all really good on stage as well. And so maybe the contrast between all of their personalities and ours, maybe each one enhances the other or something. But I think basically Ron has always been that stoic sort of character on stage, and I've been more the outgoing type. So,
It's your physicality in that performance, and I presume on this tour, it's really remarkable. You're moving, you're kinetic, but you're hitting these notes, and I'm very impressed by it.
Oh, thanks.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
It's a lot of work because I appreciate what you said. I just take pride in, you know, being able to sing on key. And, you know, if you move around a lot too, you know, it's harder to, you know, you get winded and stuff. And
yeah,
so
totally.
It's harder to sing as well as if you're standing, obviously, and not moving. It's a lot easier. But in any case, I take pride in, you know, just being able to sing well, so I'm glad if it's coming across that way. I'm doing my job properly.
No, it's really fascinating. I can't wait to see the band in Toronto myself. Now,
yeah, well, we're looking forward to coming there, so it's going to be exciting.
Before we go, I do want to ask about working with Alex and collaborating. This song "Collaborations Don't Work" is so amazing. And it's so funny and self-aware. And I just am curious about the process of working. You mentioned earlier that it's been a transatlantic kind of thing. But can you talk a little bit about actually finding common ground creatively with this band and with Alex and how that's working?
Yeah, well, like I mentioned earlier, there, you know, certain songs we'd come up with on our own, and there were a few that they had come up with. And that song specifically, Collaborations Don't Work, was the first song that was written that we came up with after Piss Off, after we reconnected with the Franz Ferdinand guys, and we sent them that song intact, and we said, you know, we thought, well, both from a lyrical perspective, we just thought it was had an interesting quality, bearing in mind what we were about to embark on,
yeah,
and that just also musically it was pretty challenging, and so they really responded to it positively and really liked it. And Alex did write that one section that says, "I ain't no collaborator." That section is from him as sort of his rebuttal to our whole opus.
Yeah,
So they really appreciated the both the sentiment behind it and also the musicality to the song. And so it's been a really great, just creative, relationship with them.
In terms of your output, have we heard, those of us who have listened to this record, have we heard everything that you both have come up with to this point? Were there songs that didn't make it onto the record?
There's a few songs that didn't make it onto the album that, just because we had, we were pretty prolific when the process started of writing. So we have a few things that Ron and I have written that were in that didn't get recorded for the album that we had waiting and were proposed to the guys, and everybody liked them, but maybe for one reason or another, like there was one song too many of a certain, whatever type, tempo, whatever. So there's some extra songs that at some point hopefully we'll get to.
Okay.
In some form or another.
This project might have a future beyond this record. Is that
it's hard to know where it's headed. As it says in the lyric to the song, Collaborations Don't Work, where is this damn thing a-going?
You don't know. And you mentioned,
we don't know.
You mentioned for Sparks there are musicals in the offing, potentially, yeah, as projects. Is there anything else?
Yeah, no, I mean, for the moment, that's the next stuff that we have, that's already actually finished.
Mm-hmm.
The music to them is finished, so those things are moving along, both on an independent track from each other, and then we'll see what happens beyond that for Sparks.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Well, once again, the self-titled debut by FFS is a tremendous one. It's out now via Domino Records, and their world tour brings them to Toronto Sound Academy on September 30th. And for more information about these things, please visit ffsmusic.com. Russell, is there a song from the new record that we can go out on?
Why don't you play the song we talked about, Johnny Delusional.
Johnny Delusional. Now, this kicks off the record. Is this why you chose it? It's a nice first impression?
Yeah, it seemed to encapsulate a lot about the tone of this album. So I think it kind of, if you have to play one song only, I would, a good choice.
Okay, this is Johnny Delusional by FFS. Russell, this was a great honor and a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks for your time and the best of luck.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. Thanks so much. And we're looking forward to coming to Toronto.
Words are in my head, but I can't enunciate them clearly. Headphones on your head, they prevent a chance to even try.
Some might find me borderline attractive from afar, but afar is not where I can stay, and there you are. Though I want you, still I want you, Johnny Delusional here. I know yes and no in a couple dozen other languages.
don't work, they don't work. Collaborations don't work, they don't work, they don't work. Collaborations don't work, they don't work, they don't work. I'm gonna do it all by myself. I'm gonna do it all by myself.
Collaborations don't work. They don't work, they don't work. Collaborations don't work. They don't work, they don't work. Collaborations don't work. They don't work, they don't work. I'm gonna do it all by myself. I'm gonna do it all by myself. Mozart didn't need a little hand-to-do job.
Alex Kapranos is a very talented musician and singer who originally hails from Glasgow, Scotland. In 2002, he co-founded the band Franz Ferdinand, who remain one of the most popular and influential rock bands in the world. Among their fans are Ron and Russell Mayle of the inspiring band Sparks, and this mutual admiration has led to the remarkable collaboration FFS, whose self-titled debut came out this past June via Domino Records, and will certainly stand as one of the finest albums of 2015. FFS are on a world tour that brings them to Toronto's Phoenix on September 30th, and here now to discuss it is Alex Kapranos. Hi, Alex, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you, I'm good.
Now, where in the world are you today?
I'm in London. I'm here for a couple of days before I come over to North America. I'm going to go to New York for a few days and up to Toronto for our first gig.
Nice, that's great. And now, when you come to Canada, do you try to make a special effort to meet with Nardwar, the human serviette?
I do like Nardwar, yeah. He interviewed us on one of our, possibly our very first trip to Vancouver, and we've stayed in touch over the years. Yeah, an incredible mind, Nardwar, one of the most exceptional knowledges of music I've ever come across.
Right, yeah, he is a remarkable man, but and I'm sure he'd love to see you. Are you planning to go to Vancouver on this trip?
We're not going to make Vancouver, unfortunately. So, I hope we do get to see each other. But I'll give him a shout, see what he's up to.
Now, what has surprised you the most about both the reception to and the execution of this partnership with FFS? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Well, the reaction, I don't know if any of us really had any idea what the reaction was going to be. And we weren't really thinking about it while we were executing the record as well, because we just started off writing some songs, sending songs back and forward, and we didn't know where it was going to take us. We would start off with, they sent us an idea for a song, and we sent them an idea for a song. And before we knew it, we had a half a dozen or so, then a few more than that. And so I said, oh, it's quite a lot here. Should we maybe do a record? And said, yeah, okay, let's do an album. And so we didn't tell anybody, didn't even tell the label that we were up to anything until we had a full album's worth of material. And even then, we kept it to ourselves and we were recording. And it wasn't until it was all out, recorded and ready to go that we actually told the world. And I think that's, well, for me anyway, it's the best way to undertake any project, because that way you don't feel you have to meet the expectations of the outside world. Nobody is judging you as you are creating. It's only afterwards. And so it's cool, because it maybe it frees you up a little bit. You know, you're not worried about whether you're going a little bit too far off an expected course with a particular song or a particular idea. It was a good way to work.
Now, was that secrecy something? I was trying to figure out what you meant there. Was the discovery of the beauty of secrecy something that occurred during the FFS sessions, or is that something you'd employed in Franz Ferdinand or other projects?
It is something that I like, you know. I do like to keep ourselves to ourselves and not tell too many people about what your ideas are until you have executed them. Because yeah, it's good to not let other people's expectations mold what you're doing. With this one, it kind of came about. It's just the way it evolved as well, really. You know, we just started off the work and didn't really plan for it to be secret, but it just ended up that way, mainly because we didn't know what it was going to be.
Yeah, and that's it's sort of like you started a brand new band. I mean, you literally did start a brand new band.
Well, that's what it does feel like. It's funny because all of the members of our old bands are in this new band, but, you know, it's not Franz Ferdinand featuring Ron and Russell, and it's not Sparks featuring me on vocals or anything like that. It is a completely new band, and it's been kind of fun doing that. And also, as we were going along, we kind of realized that there aren't really many examples of a band like this either. You know, the role of kind of super groups of the late 1960s, early 70s, but even then, they seem to be more one member of one group getting together with a member of another and then bringing in somebody from a third group. This was two complete entities coming together to form something completely new.
Well, you certainly kind of speak to that with the song Collaborations Don't Work, which, I mean, I was curious about. It's one thing to be mutual fans and to collaborate here and there, but this prospect of writing with Sparks, can you talk a little bit about why it seems to work? What? Because I know you have some things in common. I know you both are fans of one another. Is that all it was? Why did this collaboration actually work?
Yeah, this is one of the first songs that we worked on together. And in a way, it was cool that it was the first one because the song kind of addresses all the issues that collaborating can produce. And I think addressing them straight on right at the beginning and with a sense of humor, you know, it made the whole collaborating process a lot easier.
What about the sense of humor in music? I don't know that humor in music is often given its due respect. It's often viewed as a novelty. Sparks are remarkable at infusing their work with sort of a cynicism, a sardonic edge. You do this as well. Why do you suppose, or rather, do you suppose humor gets short shrift among critics and fans?
I think that often musicians and songwriters particularly are terrified of humor because I'd say with the way that we write and the way that Sparks write, we don't really write humorous songs, but there are elements of humor within the song. So say, for example, a song like Johnny Delusional, it might be quite a dark song itself, you know, about sort of like the darkest form of infatuation. But it's got a line like, "Some might find me borderline attractive from afar," which I don't know if it makes everybody laugh, but it certainly makes me laugh. And I feel it's more just, we like to approach songwriting the same way that we approach life, which is that it has light and shade to it, that you can have darker elements and you can have humor within the same piece, the same piece of work. And because if anything, it just reflects the life that's around about us. And it's weird as well, because I often meet up with friends of mine that are musicians in other bands that are extremely dark, and sometimes they're the funniest folk around, but I kind of wonder, why does that get lost when you come to write your music and you only concentrate on this one aspect of your personality? I think it's good to have all of it in there.
I think people are afraid to seem less than serious.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I think it's because there's this idea that if you pull humor in there, it somehow trivializes the subject matter. And I strongly disagree with that. I think you can still have humor and still have a seriousness of intent with your writing.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite lines on the record is in that same song you referenced, this paging Mr. Delusional, "You're wanted at the front desk." That's funny.
Oh, yes.
That's hilarious. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I think the record's fantastic. What is it? I've read about your discovery of Sparks. I believe you found they were in a stack of singles that you discovered somewhere, right?
Yeah, that's right. I guess when I was from my teens onwards, the way I used to discover music of the past in a pre-internet age was to go to second-hand shops, and particularly there was a big flea market in Glasgow, and I would go down and I'd buy a stack of records and take them back and listen to them and see what I liked and see what I didn't like, and that way discover things. And one particular time I came back with a stack of 45s, didn't like any of them apart from this one bizarre song, which is called Amateur Hour by this band I didn't really know anything about, called Sparks. And yeah, from there, from that one song, it led me on to their whole career, and I discovered that not only were they a band from the 70s, but they were a contemporary band at that time in the 90s, and they'd just released Gratuitous Sax and Senseless Violins. So, mm-hmm. And, well, not only contemporaries of the 70s and 90s, but of the 2010s as well. They're a band with a remarkably long career.
Do you have a sense of why they aren't more well known, given how inventive, innovative? They're often ahead of their time. Do you have a sense of why this isn't really celebrated by people? I mean, I think your collaboration with them is certainly going to open Sparks up to a whole new audience, and I think it's already done that. But do you have a sense of why this hasn't resonated with more people?
Yeah, I know that personally that was part of the motivation for embarking on this collaboration for us. It was just saying, you know, here's this great band, and of course we want to work with them because we like them as a creative force, but it would be great for other people to find out about what it is they've done before as well. As for why, I don't know. You know, I think in some ways they're quite awkward, and they're not exactly, they don't necessarily follow the most obvious commercial path that other bands of their contemporaries might have taken. I don't know. It also seems that in different parts of the world, they've had different periods of success. Like in the UK, they're mainly known for their 1970s output, especially the first three records that they did in the UK. They worked with Muff Winwood and Tony Visconti. Then in the early 80s, they seemed to have a certain degree of success in California, where they became like almost like a college rock radio band over there. And then in the 90s, we became a big band in France and in Germany, whereas they weren't so popular in the UK and back in the US. I don't know. It just seems that they've evolved in their odd particular path over the years, and seem to be quite happy doing so as well. I don't think they were necessarily ever striving for worldwide domination. They just wrote the way that they did and performed the way that they did, and didn't make any attempt to compromise that to fit any particular audience.
Yeah, they seem content with what they're doing, and I think it's. I don't want to put too fine a point on this, but I think it's rather admirable for you to not only talk about Sparks but work with them, I think, because it's beneficial to you artistically as well.
Oh, artistically, it's always good to collaborate with people you find inspiring. I mean, Ron and Russell could have any history behind them. They could be a new band of guys who are in their late teens, and or they could be like they are now, like 70 and 67, and with this large career behind them. It's the mind behind it, which is really what's important.
Yeah.
And it's been great working with them. And I feel the same about the other three guys and Franz Ferdinand as well. I'm very, very lucky to have collaborated with these musicians who I get on really well with and enjoy it. You know, I mean, sometimes you can sort of cut through all the hyperbole and get to the most important fact, that it's got to be enjoyable. You got to have a good laugh while you're doing it. It's
yeah.
Got to turn you on, you know.
I was watching the Glastonbury Festival performance by FFS, which is, it's on YouTube and people can watch it if they like. I was struck by the dynamic between you and Russell on stage, because he seems so manic and you seem relatively, and I think uncharacteristically, calm. How has your performance mode shifted from Franz Ferdinand to FFS?
It's definitely a little different, you know. One thing, I don't really play the guitar so much in FFS. It's more performing as a singer. I've really enjoyed that. I've also enjoyed singing with Russell. And I think it's not often you get a band that has two frontmen like this or two lead singers. The only bands we were sort of thinking of were things like ABBA, you know? It was fun. I think it worked because our personalities go well together. We get on together off stage as well as on stage, and so I think that made it a little easier. And also the fact that, even in the most obvious sense, our vocal ranges are quite different from each other, and quite often in the performance, Russell is singing an octave above where I'm singing, so I'm maybe singing a little lower than I would in my normal range, and he's singing right at the top of his range, and then sometimes we cross over, and yeah, it's been a good laugh.
Nice.
And we didn't know it was going to work until we tried it as well, and immediately it clicked. And even when we were in the studio, we were singing with the two of us side by side, like literally sort of like an arm's breadth away from each other, both singing live together.
Well, it's a remarkable thing. Given the earlier conversation about secrecy and planning, I don't know how much I'm going to get out of you by asking you simply what's next for you. For FFS, perhaps, and also for Franz Ferdinand. I wasn't sure what you had planned for Franz Ferdinand before FFS, but can you speak to any of that, the future?
Well, you know, like I said earlier, we had no idea where this project was going to take us. We had no idea what was going to happen with it, and I love that feeling, and I've still got no idea where it's going to go. I know we're going to end up in North America and play some shows. After that, I'm not really sure. Let's just wait and see what happens.
All right, that sounds fair to me. Once again, the self-titled debut by FFS is a tremendous one. It's out now via Domino Records, and their world tour brings them to Toronto's Phoenix on September 30th. For more information, please visit ffsmusic.com. Now, Alex, is there a song from this new record that we can go out on?
Sure. Yeah, I know which one. There's a song called Police Encounters, and that was the first song that I heard back. We'd sent over some music to Ron and Russell, and then they sent it back, and they'd put a vocal melody on top, and we then added to that vocal melody, and it was the first song that really went back and forwards, and it was the first time that I heard something, and I thought, wow, that sounds like both bands and like neither band simultaneously. It sounded like something new, yet we could recognize what all of the elements were that were making it up. And it was a really exciting moment. And so, yeah, I'd love to hear that song right now.
All right, let's go for that. This is Police Encounters by FFS. Alex, it's a pleasure to speak with you, and I wish you the best of luck. Thanks for making this band. It's great.
Oh, no, cheers. Thank you very much, and see you over there.
You come to Harlem
for the space we had to see. But I remained in Harlem, had to pay my parking fees. Felt just like B.T. Barnum, caught a couple picture plays. I should have stayed in Harlem, then I heard a policeman say, I think we should disarm him, I think we should strong arm him. So out of place in Harlem, then I see you.
Say, be a bastard, not alarm him. I've got eyes.
There you have it. I hope you enjoyed those conversations with Russell Mail and Alex Kapranos of the new band FFS. Go check out that record if you haven't picked it up yet. I've been telling everyone. It's really fantastic. What do I need to tell you about right now? Not much. The Drive Like Jehu documentary that I've been working on has been completed, but needs some tinkering and fine-tuning and all that stuff. So I'm going to work on that just as soon as I am able. It's been a bit busy around here. So, yeah, that's the one of the next big things. I'm not sure who else is going to be on the show sometime soon. Well, Eugene Merman's going to be on the show. Do you know Eugene Merman, comedian? One of the voice actors of the show Bob's Burgers. He's coming up at some point soon. And then I don't know what else. I can't remember. I just can't remember right now. Here's what I do remember. If you want to, you can subscribe and like and review this show on iTunes. You can do similar things on Audio Boom. You can go to patreon.com to make a flexible monthly donation to this show to keep it going. You can also go there to view t-shirts that we have for sale pertaining to the show. You can like the Facebook page for Creative Control with Vish Khanna. You can follow us on Twitter at Vish Creative. You can listen to the show or a version of the show every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. Go to CFRU.ca for more information about that. And that is it. Or you can go to vishkhanna.com. That's another thing you can do. So those are some things you can do. All right. Talk to you soon.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.